So continuing the Bhagavad-gita study, 7th canto, chapter 9, Prahlad pacifies the Lord with prayers, and we were up to text number 24. Yep. So, yeah. Is that recording? Oh, yep. So, Prahlad Maharaj, my dear Lord, now I have complete experience concerning the worldly opulence, mystic power, longevity, and other material pleasures enjoyed by all living entities. From Brahma down to the ant. As powerful time, you destroy them all. Therefore, because of my experience, I do not wish to possess them. My dear Lord, I request you to place me in touch with your pure devotee and let me serve him as a sincere servant. So, do we read that?
No. Don't do that. Yeah,
we didn't do that.
No.
Yeah, so we stopped at 23 and... We ended with the instruction that the Prabhupada says in the purport to 23 that therefore one should conclusively understand that no one is greater than the Supreme Great. Since the Supreme Great demands Savadamam Prajyagya, Mamikam Saranam Braja, every intelligent person, every intelligent man must agree to this proposal. One must surrender unto the Lord, be saved from the wheel of repeated birth, death, old age and disease. So Srila Prabhupada, picking up on the mood of Prahlad Maharaj that we all have to surrender to the Lord. There is no alternative to this. And the material alternative is a dismal failure. So then in this verse here today, 24, where we're picking up, we see that Prahlad Maharaj is concluding that therefore he is happily surrendering to the Lord, and rather than try to control the material energy, he's surrendering to the Lord. And to surrender to the Lord, he asks that he wants to be a sincere servant of his pure devotee. And Srila Prabhupada says that in this way, that at the bottom of his purport he says, Prahlad Maharaj rejected them all. That means Bhukti Mukti city. He's rejecting all the perfections one can have, and he's saying he simply wants to be engaged as an apprentice under the guidance of a pure devotee. So, and this purport, of course, picks up with the mood, a very significant theme that we've been following in the prayers to from Prahlad Maharaj, that although he is a great Mahajan, one of the 12 great authorities, he is in direct contact with the personality of Godhead, who has personally appeared to save him, not just through his energies, but personally appeared to save him. Still, he's teaching us that what pleases the Supreme Personality of Godhead is when we take shelter of his pure devotees, not that we pose ourselves as a great devotee and try to approach the Lord directly. This is a very consistent theme of what is the actual mood of devotees, which we should all follow. From the very beginning of the chapter, we see that Every devotee must always keep himself in a humble state of mind, as Prahlada Maharaj did. And that humble state of mind is actually manifest when we place ourselves under the shelter of the Lord's pure devotees. Now, so Srila Prabhupada mentions some very significant points in reference to this in this purport. Now, of course, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada makes this point here, that by studying Srimad Bhagavatam, every intelligent man can get experience like that of Prahlad through the historical incidences mentioned in this great literature of spiritual knowledge. By following the footsteps of Prahlad, one should gain thorough experience that all material opulence is perishable at every moment. So, you know, one of the common statements that people make these days, where they feel that they're justifying why they took birth in the particular body they did and experiencing the suffering that they are, and they feel that they have chosen, people say that I have chosen to take birth in this body to experience certain things to help my spiritual growth. So they feel that by experiencing significant misery in different stages of life, that that is part of their spiritual development. But actually, here, you know, we learn that you don't have to go through the hard way of experience. You can actually learn by hearing. One way we can actually experience is just by hearing from personalities who can say that. So, for instance, if someone says, "If you touch that fire, you will get burnt." So an intelligent person can say, so now I have experienced the results of interacting with fire. If I touch it, I will get burnt. By hearing, therefore, I will avoid the misery. I don't have to touch it to actually, you know, experience it. I can experience it by hearing. So that's called first-class intelligence. But it's a very common saying that people who, you know, who follow you know, the spiritual mood, that somehow they are in control of their own births, you know, they are one with God, and because they're one with God, in fact, no one is controlling them. By their free will, because they are one with the Supreme, they are in fact dictating their own births, and they're doing that in order to experience things, to experience different, to realize the fullness of happiness, they realize the fullness of misery, and so many different nonsense things. But in actuality, no, it's very, very common actually. In actuality, that whole nonsense is defeated by saying there are three different types of intelligence. You have first class intelligence who experiences by hearing, especially from the Bhagavatam. Second class, they have, you know, they were here. Don't touch the fire. They will touch it, and then they'll realize, oh, you know, that was true. So at least they've learned, they won't touch it again. Third class intelligent, which is really not very intelligent at all, is that they actually will touch the fire again and again and again. So that, you know, that's the first point that Srila Prabhupada mentions. So Prahlad Maharaj has taken the first. He has heard from Narada Muni, and from the very beginning of his life he has not tried to enjoy material existence. And then, to confirm that, he has actually seen, you know, that what the Bhagavatam has said, he's seen it played out in the life of his father. So it's been confirmed in both ways. So that's a very important point. Now, but on this point of, you know, a devotee who wants to associate with the personality of Godhead in a loving relationship, being done by taking shelter of a pure devotee, not trying to directly approach the Lord, Prabhupada mentions this verse here that, you know, he quotes Narottam Das Thakur, which is then confirmed by the Bhagavad Gita 4.9, that in order to save yourself from the material onslaughts, which arise because we have a material body, we must become thoroughly Krishna conscious. Now, the Bhagavad Gita says the same thing, Janma Karma Chame Divyam Ivam Yoveti Tatpadaha. One should understand Krishna in truth, and this one can do only by serving a pure devotee. So generally, when devotees, even, what to speak of others, read that verse from Bhagavad Gita, that one who understands, you know, the nature of Krishna's birth and activities does not take birth again in this world, but attains my supreme abode. So one might think then, okay, so if I study the Bhagavad Gita and, you know, and related literatures, I'll understand Krishna. And then I'll become Krishna conscious, and then I won't take birth again. But here Prabhupada is saying that's not how it is, because the Bhagavad Gita itself says, Ivam Parampara Praptam, that actually you'll only understand if you hear from a devotee. Okay? So then, you know, those verses are connected. What people tend to do, of course, is they take a verse from the Bhagavad Gita which suits them, and they follow that. But actually, the whole 700 verses are connected. None of them nullify each other. So Srila Prabhupada is reminding us of that connection in the Bhagavad Gita here, that yes, you try to understand Krishna in this lifetime, but it's not just by academic study of the Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. If you don't take shelter of a pure devotee of the Lord, then you'll not actually be successful. It is done through the Parampara system. And of course, that topic of the parampara, what constitutes the parampara, is another very significant theme that we're following, you know, through this teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. So pretty much as we you know, read these first couple of verses, we're picking up the same theme very strongly. And of course, and this is one of the things we try to do as we go through the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is different from the daily classes, where, of course, the daily classes of Srimad Bhagavatam and what have you, they're very helpful, in which each of the verses can be, you know, fluffed out considerably, looked at in detail, which is very nice. And but you may not always be able to follow the some of the main themes of the Bhagavatam itself, or even those chapters, or even the whole section, just by attending class. That may, you know, that you'd have to be really, you know, remembering all the different classes and what have you. But quite often the speakers are not necessarily speaking in such a way as to put it into context, although it's helpful when they do. You know, it's actually very helpful when a speaker speaks at Bhagavatam class and just very quickly at the beginning puts it into a little bit of a context. That's helpful. But generally, that's not always the case, more often than not. So here it is, and of course, we do, you know, try to write certain essays and some of the main themes. There are many themes. This particular one of Prahlad Maharaj's mood of devotional service is a very prominent theme in this section. Of all things, we should try to. Prahlad Maharaj is one of the great Mahajans, the teachers of Bhakti Yoga, and picking up on what is his mood of devotional service, what is his secrets, what is his essential teachings of Bhakti, and how he practiced that in this situation is one of the main things we can get. You know, from there's certainly Krishna Tattva is there as well within this, because we understand how Krishna is dealing with his devotees and dealing with the demons. So that's Krishna Tattva, but the Bhakti Tattva coming from Prahlad is something, of course, that you know, we can we should follow in his footsteps. So that's a very significant thing in this section. So, just to So we have, you know, in the matter of that theme, that Prahlad Maharaj, he was asked by personalities like Brahma, goddess of fortune, Shiva, all the demigods, to approach Lord Narasimhadev because he could not be pacified, even though they themselves were, you know, ranging from, you know, very exalted devotees of various calibers, you know, including the goddess of fortune, the eternal companion of the Lord. And still, Prahlad Maharaj was asked to approach the Lord because they were not able to pacify him. At the same time, you know, we do understand that, as, you know, as you pointed out in the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core, there is Lili going on here where, you know, the goddess of fortune who ordinarily, you know, can approach her husband, Lord Narayana, Krishna. In this case, by the arrangement of Krishna, Prahlad Maharaj was able to do something more than the goddess of fortune. So, you know, which is a very interesting concept. But again, Prahlad Maharaj at no stage feels that therefore he is greater or even equal to such exalted personalities. He still considers himself to be most unqualified, both materially and spiritually. And to get a little understanding of this, we see in the life of Srila Prabhupada that his spiritual master, by the arrangement of Leela, in the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, he did not spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, and yet it was his strong desire, even back to Vinod Thakur. But Srila Prabhupada did. So Srila Prabhupada was able to do something more significantly greater than the previous acharyas, even his own spiritual master. By the arrangement of Leela, yet Srila Prabhupada never considered himself to have any real qualification, certainly never felt himself to be greater than his spiritual master or equal to. You know, here we see that sometimes personalities who are very, very exalted for the purpose of glorification, Leela, you know, may allow other devotees to do something even greater than that they have done or can do, and they take pleasure in glorifying that particular devotee as more wonderful than they are. And yet that devotee who's being glorified considers that whatever I'm doing is being done by their mercy. So, you know, in spiritual transaction, it's like that. You know, there's an absolute platform where, in one sense, it's absolute, that no one is higher than another. In another sense, there are varieties of love and transactions. Sometimes we see that, you know, in that verse, Asli Shava Paradatam Banastamam, that Krishna embraces one gopi and another one is feeling somewhat, you know, left out. And then sometimes that reverses. So, this is all part of, you know, increasing various flavors and intensities in loving relationships. It's all, you know, so it's all enhancing loving relationships that everyone is, you know, and being tossed about in the waves of this ocean of ecstatic love. So it's very nice. So when you understand it like that, that, you know, there's this ocean of ecstatic love, and sometimes you're being tossed this way and risen up, and sometimes you're going this way. But ultimately, it's all ecstatic love like that, with variety. but at no stage does any of the devotees ever consider themselves to be, you know, they always take the humble mood, and they're very happy to glorify other devotees, and you know, see the hand of the Lord in what they're doing. And so this sort of pastime, from a material perspective, is very difficult to understand, but from the perspective of rasa and loving pastimes with the Lord, it can be understood. So but it's that it's that transcendental life we seek. You know, we try to rise above the propensity to seek glorification for our activities in devotional service. You know, to rise above the propensity to you know, be proud and feel oneself better than other devotees. You know, rise above the propensity to you know, try to, you know, degrade or belittle devotees, and you know, falsely puff oneself. So, you know, those propensities you don't find in the activities of Prahlada Maharaj. So we have to learn, you know, this, that art. That's, you know, this is what we're trying to learn. That this is how we behave with each other, like that. So then you see in this next verse, verse 26, says, "O my Lord, O Supreme, because I'm born in a family." 25. I jumped on. It's my enthusiasm. It's a nice verse. So this is 25. "In this material world, every living entity desires some future happiness, which is exactly like a mirage in the desert." Where is war in the desert? Or in other words, where is happiness in this material world? "As for this body, what is its value? It is merely a source of various diseases. The so-called philosophers, scientists, and politicians know this very well, but nonetheless, they aspire for temporary happiness. Happiness is very difficult to obtain, but because they're unable to control their senses, they run after the so-called happiness of the material world and never come to the right conclusion." So then, as Prahlada Maharaj has explained, powerful time is destroying everyone's attempts in this material world. So why would they just not all give it up? And that is because the senses are uncontrolled. And because of that, they see some illusion of happiness somewhere in front of them, and they chase after it with the uncontrolled senses, even though their experiences, or every time I've done this, I've always ended up with a mouthful of sand, desert sand, hot desert sand, you know, not water. But again and again they'll try. So he's just reaffirming that. Otherwise it's quite... and Srila Prabhupada, again, comes back to this point, that our desires cannot be satisfied by illusory thoughts and plans. Rather, we have to follow the instructions of Lord Krishna. Sarvadamam parikya gyamam ikam sarvanam braja. Then we shall be happy. Otherwise, in the name of happiness, we shall continue to suffer miserable conditions. So he reaffirms that. Text number 26. "O my Lord, O Supreme, because I was born in a family full of the hellish material qualities of passion and ignorance, what is my position? And what is to be said of your causeless mercy, which was never offered even to Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, or the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi? You never put your lotus hand upon their heads, but you have put it upon mine." So, now, Prahlada Maharaj, of course, is very surprised at the causeless mercy of Krishna in his form in the Shringa. Being born in a demoniac family, and although the Lord had never placed his lotus hand on the head of Brahma Shiva, the goddess of fortune, he placed his hand on the head of Prahlad. This is the meaning of causeless mercy. So Prahlad Maharaj is pointing out that the nature of the Lord's mercy is causeless. There is no material cause. The causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead may be bestowed upon anyone, regardless of his position in the material world. Everyone is eligible to worship the Supreme Lord, irrespective of his material position. So again, this is a nice move by Prahlad Maharaj. He's not trying to find some great qualifications. Well, you know, the Lord didn't give this mercy to them, but I got it because I've done this and I've done I've this. I have no qualification, but this is the nature of the Lord. He has causeless mercy. So just always maintaining that position of being disqualified showing how unlimited is the causeless mercy. Here is his eternal companion, the goddess of fortune. He has given mercy to me, born in a demoniac family, that he's not given the goddess of fortune. Who can even understand that? That just goes beyond. How do we even understand that sort of level of causeless mercy? So, and of course, you know, this is a very important point, because you know, as devotees, we always have to remember that when we're dealing in ISKCON, every devotee who takes shelter of ISKCON from the very beginning is subject to the causeless mercy of Krishna. So what qualification, you know, can we put on them as to how they deserve this and how they don't deserve this? And, you know, okay. Krishna has causeless mercy. We have to be very, very careful of how we sometimes put our material perspective on who's deserving and who is not. Very, very careful. As Krishna has bestowed his causeless mercy, that is above all our material concepts as to. And so in preaching, and especially because you know, Krishna is in this particular day of Brahma and this particular Kali Yuga, Krishna appeared in the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The causeless mercy of Krishna is unprecedented, even for Krishna. So then Prahlad Maharaj is also making this point that you know, don't consider that, you know, in effect, I have done something wonderful. The Lord is causelessly merciful, and every single person can attain this extraordinary mercy of the Supreme Lord as I have. Every living entity, no matter how fallen, no matter what birth, every living entity I have, but every living entity. So it's not unique to me. And so Prabhupada quotes this verse from Bhagavad Gita 14:26. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and then comes to the level of Brahman. So he uses that verse to confirm this verse, that anyone who engages in continuous devotional service to the Lord is situated in the spiritual world and has nothing to do with material qualities. So despite the fact that one has may have been born in a low place, materially considering material situation, the example Prabhupada gives is that when iron is put into a fire, it becomes red hot and it is no longer iron but fire. Similarly, the so-called material bodies are devotees who fully engage in devotional service, being constantly in the fire of spiritual life, have nothing to do with matter but are spiritualized. So, Madhvacharya is quoting here in his remarks that, again, the surprising fact that although the goddess of fortune is always the constant companion of the Lord is more inclined to his devotees. And, in other words, devotional service is so great that when it is offered, even by those born in low families, the Lord accepts it as being more valuable than the service offered by the goddess of fortune. And you were making the point the other day, Kavirindesh, about the nature of performing devotional service under great difficulties in the material world, that you do get credit for that. You do get credit. Those who I have heard different devotees speak on that, Krishna does acknowledge that if you're doing devotional service in this material world, and devotees who give up their youth for Krishna, mm-hmm. you get acknowledged for that as well. If you can surrender to Krishna at a young age, rather than later on after you sort of work, Krishna will actually acknowledge that. And all the hardships that devotees go through, everything, Krishna acknowledges that. He takes it on board. So it's very reassuring. It's quite extraordinary. You would think it'd be the opposite. You would think that, well, here are the devotees in the spiritual world, like the goddess of fortune, or, great personalities like Brahma, Shiva, that they've never really been in a disqualified position, so somehow there's, that they would get the first consideration in one sense. And yet Krishna is saying, yes, but consider this. These persons are so disqualified and still they engage in my devotional service. What a battle that was for them. to rise above the senses, to rise, to break free from millions of lives of conditioning and to serve me. And so he acknowledges that. It's quite extraordinary. And, you do see that with, when you look at Srila Prabhupada's disciples in the early days, they never had the facility of Bhakti Shastri, Bhaktivedanta. They didn't even have all the Prabhupada books, tapes, They may have one or two now and then. No database, no computers. Sometimes no temple.
Yes.
No congregation.
No money.
No money. No home. rejected by society,
mm.
And yet, so it's almost like, according to today's standards, they wouldn't be qualified for initiation. And they wouldn't be qualified to live in the ashrams. And many of them wouldn't be qualified to associate with it. So, in one sense, those who sometimes do the bhakti shastri and this and that and take Brahman and what have you, feel themselves so very, very qualified. But they, according to this verse, Krishna will take those persons who come from a more disadvantaged situation and still engage in devotional service to their full capacity. They're, you know, open to extraordinary mercy that we cannot even understand, by Krishna. And yet we may be feeling very, very proud that, you know, compared to those devotees, you know, I've done this, done that, and so on. So, you know, in the verses of the, you know, sometimes people have asked me, you know, how does a devotee always stay humble? And I always like to quote that verse from Srinivasacharya, the six Goswamis. That the six Goswamis are always meek and humble. How? Because they were always enchanted by the transcendental qualities of the Lord. If a devotee stops to reflect on the unlimited mercy of the personality of God, the causeless mercy of the personality of Godhead, as the main factor in whatever we're able to do as a devotee in our devotional life, you'd have to actually disregard that to be proud, in fact. To be proud, you'd actually have to disregard the causeless mercy. You'd have to put that aside, forget about that, and just consider our own endeavours. So, so you know, it's that same mood that's there within the verses of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, always meek and humble, enchanted by remembering the transcendental qualities of the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj is doing the same. How could he be not be humble when he's reflecting on the causeless mercy of the Lord, which is so overwhelming? So,
That's
right. It's not an artificial platform if one feels humble, sincere.
Mm.
It's artificial if one doesn't feel humble, but is saying they're humble. If one is acting in a puffed up way, one is behaving, you know, you say, generally shows up, one is offhand in their dealings with other devotees. And at the same time, saying, yes, I'm just a humble devotee. That is insincere. So, verse 27. Unlike an ordinary living entity, my Lord, you do not discriminate between friends and enemies, the favorable and the unfavorable, because for you, there is no conception of higher and lower. Nonetheless, you offer your benedictions according to the level of one's service. Exactly as a desire tree delivers fruits according to one's desires and makes no distinction between the lower and the higher. So Srila Prabhupada again quoted in the fourth chapter of the Gita. As one surrenders unto me, I reward him accordingly. So, every living entity is an eternal servant of Krishna, and according to the service the living entity renders, he automatically receives benedictions from Krishna, who does not make distinctions, thinking, here is a person in an intimate relationship with me, and here is a person I dislike. Krishna advises everyone to surrender to him. One's relationship with the Supreme Lord is in proportion to that surrender and the service one renders unto the Lord. So, you know, the Lord is, one may say, if the Lord is unlimitedly merciful, how can we see that not everyone is getting a share of that mercy? And that is because some persons are, you know, requiring the benediction of going to the heavenly planets, or they're wanting the benediction of going to Pitraloka, or they want to be a pig. So the Lord, Prabhupada used to say this. If you have any material desire, Krishna is very merciful, he would say. If you want to become a pig, he will let you become a pig. And he would quote this. Krishna is very merciful. You want to become a tiger, you want to become a worm, so Krishna will fulfill your desire. And he would, you know, demonstrate that that is a measure of Krishna being very merciful. He's not going, you know, to interfere. He's actually fulfilling everyone's desires. So one can't, you know, point the finger at Krishna, but, you know, somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. This verse sounds like, you know, like the answer or the discussion we had in the beginning of the canto. And the question was posed, whether the Lord is favorable or unfavorable. Yeah. Why is he favoring someone? Why is he not favoring someone? So that's how the canto started with. So
with this theme, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's theme, a very good point. Yeah. So lock that verse in. You're doing an essay on that.
Yeah, that's
So I think there is an essay on that point, isn't
it?
Yeah. So remember that verse. Mm. Yeah, it's a very good point. So very good that you've followed that theme from the very beginning. And so now, again, before, you know, we're making the point that every devotee who takes shelter of ISKCON certainly is eligible for Krishna's causeless mercy, especially in respect to bhakti, which is quite extraordinary. And so we have to be, you know, we're open to the fact that there may be someone we do not like, and yet Krishna is extraordinarily merciful to that person. Mm. It's not our business really to like or dislike in one sense, is it? And of course Krishna is extraordinarily merciful to all his devotees. And the other point here, which is very significant, is that being extraordinarily merciful, but still he reciprocates with the devotee according to their surrender. Mm-hmm. And now his extraordinary mercy, of course, is that Krishna accepts the bhakti of his devotees personally, and although he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we're all, you know, just insignificant, you know, spirit souls, still he is personally reciprocating with us. That's his causeless mercy. But he does so in such a way as to nurture that bhakti. you know, to take that little spark of bhakti and reciprocate with it in such a way as that, that bhakti will grow naturally, and any impurities within that will be, you know, cleansed away. So although he's giving unlimited mercy, still it is meted out according to what's required to help that devotee go back to Godhead. Therefore, what we see in this verse is that not only is Krishna reciprocating with every living entity according to their desires, and he's exceptionally inclined towards his devotees who engage in devotional service, but the next point is that he is reciprocating with them according to their bhakti. So that's that means that any devotee who claims to represent Krishna, see, in ISKCON, we represent Prabhupada, who represents Krishna. So we represent our spiritual master, who represents Prabhupada, who represents the Acharya, represents. So all of us, in one sense, through the parampara, are meant to represent Krishna. And that means that our only business in reciprocating with other devotees is to reciprocate with their bhakti. Because that's what Krishna is doing. He's not considering their material situation or circumstances. If a devotee reciprocates with other devotees, disregarding their bhakti, and considers other material considerations, they cannot be said to represent Krishna.
Often it happens often.
Does it? I'll take your word for it.
Guru Maharaj has said the same thing in a different way. He said, when you're dealing with devotees, don't see the external, see the internal. See what devotion service they do.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about the other things. Just see how much they're devoted. And
that way. So, just, you know, you know, without names or anything, but what would you say as an example where, you know, and maybe other devotees can reflect on this, where a devotee may, what material consideration do you think where a devotee may be considering some material situation rather than, you know, reciprocating another devotee according to their bhakti? Do you have an example of that? I'll be able to think of.
Like the recognition is given to somebody who is more influential.
Mm. Yeah, good point. Yeah, yeah. So that may, someone has influence that we, that may help us to enjoy facility, popularity, influence as well. So we favour them as to, although their bhakti may be a little bit on the nose. And other devotees may have very nice, you know, favour of bhakti, and so that's one thing. Any other, you know, why is it that you may do that?
Basically happens because we can't really see the internal bhakti, we can't gauge people through their devotional service. It's very difficult to gauge.
Look,
while externals are easy for us to gauge. Obviously, the pure devotees can see the internals of every devotional service.
There are all sorts, yeah.
If when we have material motivation ourselves, then it becomes very difficult to see the recognize the bhakti of others.
Yes, it does. Yeah, yeah. That's right. Mm. It becomes very painful. you know, sometimes there are. There are all sorts of reasons. Sometimes there are married couples and they split up, you know, they have a fight and they break up. And then, of course, they're still initiated by the same spiritual master, and, you know, they may not want that person to come to the temple, you know, like that. So I notice, you know, sometimes I've seen with Jai Pitaka Maharaj that, you know, because he has so many disciples. Things like that have happened, you know, and but he's extraordinarily merciful that, you know, he maintains the bhakti relationship of each person with ISKCON, like that. And Prabhupada, you know, which is very much Prabhupada's mood as well. Prabhupada was quite extraordinary, because sometimes even people, wanted to, they created little factions and things, you know, against ISKCON or Prabhupada, but Srila Prabhupada was extremely cautious not to reduce, you know, to dampen, you know, the enthusiasm of someone's bhakti, and always to somehow encourage it, even if there was something, you know, there was some things a bit wrong, but you wanted to encourage the good part of it, not just throw the bath, you know, it's called throwing the baby out with the bathwater. You know, you wash the baby and then you say, oh, this water's dirty, you throw the baby out with it. So throwing the bhakti out with the person's other disqualifications. That, you know, the baby is valuable. You know, the bhakti is value, something you just don't throw out.
Just two small questions. Based on this this verse in Gita, do you say that Prahlad Maharaj is more qualified than Lakshmi Devi? Or more surrendered?
I would have to consult the Brihad Bhagavatamrita for that.
Here also, it is never mentioned exactly like that, right? Here, the Lord reciprocated to Prabhupada. Does it mention that?
Yeah, it's not saying, you know, we were discussing before. Were you here before? We were discussing how, on, you know, for instance, you know, Krishna at one stage, you know, separated himself from Srimati Radharani, and then she found that he was with some other gopis, and does that mean that therefore they're unqualified? Actually, if you read the purports to the Shishastakam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see, Radharani explains that, you know, if Krishna accepts another gopi, you know, leaving me aside, then I will happily serve that gopi. Because Krishna sometimes does that. Therefore, that's why Krishna is sometimes called a debauchee. Because he rejects those who are most qualified in their loving bhakti, and he'll reject them and accept someone else. So therefore he's called a debauchee. The devotee, but all of these increase the intensity and the variety of tastes from the loving reciprocations, and there's exchanges of rasa, but so from the platform of Lakshmi, her happiness is her husband's happiness, Lord Narasimha, and which is the same, you know, as all the devotees, that if Narasimha, you know, puts her aside and pays more attention to Prahlad, then that becomes her happiness. That she will also give him her special attention at that. If that makes him, then she will become the she will offer her service to Prahlad. If that gives her, you know, so there's no envy, and but you know they do evoke different moods, and we were discussing also how in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wanted to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world, but he didn't do that, nor did Bhaktivinoda Thakur, although, you know, they began, and they made, you know, all attempts to set everything up for that, but Srila Prabhupada actually did that. So Srila Prabhupada performed a level of bhakti which was unprecedented, even by the spiritual masters in one sense. But does that make Srila Prabhupada more qualified than his spiritual master? No, because he is doing that by the grace of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. On another sense, yes, because he did something that no one has ever done. But you know, the spiritual master, you know, on the platform of love, they're happier to see their disciple do something even greater than what they've done. That's their greatest pleasure. You know, that's the glory of a spiritual master, that they can actually create a disciple who does something even more wonderful than they have done. You know, that's their great pleasure. So Srila Prabhupada is giving all credit to his spiritual master, and his spiritual master is very pleased to see his disciple do something greater than what he has done. You know, it's not really, on the material platform, it comes down to who's better than others, but on the spiritual platform, it's absolute. You know, there is no higher and lower, actually, on the spiritual platform. But at the same time, it is filled with varieties of higher and more higher and more higher and more intense loving sort of exchanges. So it's between the devotees themselves and the personality of Godhead. So, you know, Prahlad Maharaj has understood that you've shown me mercy more than what you've... You know, so in Prahlad's statement, in one sense, he's saying, you know, the goddess of fortune is greater than I am. And what's extraordinary is you've shown me more mercy than someone who's greater than me. Mm-hmm. So, and then the goddess of fortune, she will be thinking, how wonderful is my husband that he has this extraordinary mercy that is just causeless, that even surprises me. When she sees that quality in her husband, she loves him more. Not she feels, oh, you know. So these are all different. They all churn the ocean of transcendental love. You know, from our perspective, you know, being... You know, here in the material world, we always tend to think of who's got a better deal, who's getting a better deal than me. You know, have I been, you know, elevated by this, or have I been, you know, demoted? So, you know, we tend to think in those terms, but in the spiritual exchanges, that never actually happens. Those material things never happen. It's absolute. You know, you never. To become, you know, this higher love.
Yeah, according to Brihad Bhagavatam, Prahlad says, higher than Prahlad is Hanuman.
Yeah. Right, yeah. So the Bhagavatam goes through like that, that, you know, each devotee is going successively to other devotees. Hanuman, and then after Hanuman, there was, is it Dwarka?
No, Lord Shiva.
Shiva, yeah, Shiva.
Then Pandavas.
Pandavas.
Yadus,
Uddhava. And then Uddhava's glorifying the Brajavasis.
I think it's just a matter of how each devotee sees. Like, this particular sequence is mentioned in that particular book. I'm sure there must be other sequence also where Yadus are lower than Pandavas and Pandavas are higher than...
I don't think so.
No.
No.
It depends on how it is explained.
No. That's actually sentence. It's pretty fixed up. And, that's the authority. Because it's coming from Bhagavatam. Mm. Mm. It's the essence of the Bhagavatam. But, so, you know, that's just like rasa. You know, we may say that, you know, Madhuri rasa is higher than Dasya rasa. But, you know, in another sense, you know, one is not higher than the other. Because the in the past times of the Lord, so you imagine if, say, Krishna goes into the forest of Vrindavan and he wants to sit on some nice grass and enjoy some loving words with Radharani. There's no grass here. So, that's Dasya Rasa, Sandra. So, and then, he's enjoying his pastimes with Radharani, and there's no birds singing. The flowers aren't blooming. It's on an absolute platform that when Krishna's with Radharani, every spirit soul who's contributing to that leela is enjoying that one absolute platform. You can't, you see? So it's a whole absolute realm like that. And at the same time, at the same time, the qualities which are found within Madhurya Ras, there are qualities of Santa and Dasya. The qualities which are in Santa, they're also in Dasya, but there's another quality which is not there in Santa. And similarly, as you go up, the next Rasa, the qualities of the previous ones are there, but the qualities, but plus another quality. So in that way, comparatively, there is an extra realm within that rasa, it makes it higher. But those persons engage in, say, Madhurya Rasa, which is considered comparatively higher because it it has all the qualities of the other rasas plus something more. But still, those who engage in the Madhurya Rasa, all the other living entities in the other rasas are also enjoying that rasa. And, Krishna makes a statement, without Radharani, he could be with millions of gopis and he wouldn't be happy. And at the same time, because Krishna always is with Radharani, then everyone who's contributing to that pastime with Radharani, is equally contributing, to that loving exchange which Krishna is having. So the flowers are contributing to that, the beautiful setting that enhances Krishna's, and Radharani's loving exchanges. That's why Krishna didn't want to go to Dwarka. Radharani didn't want to go to Dwarka. Krishna was, there's a pastimes in, in the Rath Yatra. Radharani wants to stay in Vrindavan, because the atmosphere in Vrindavan, all the devotees and all the different rasas, they make her relationship with Krishna, whole and full as it possibly could be. So, and therefore to remove all those living entities contributing to that rasa and then go to, so it's, there's an absolute nature. And at the same time, even though everything is on an absolute platform, still we can see qualitative differences in rasa. And similarly with devotees, that, it's said by, I think it's Narahari Sakaratakova, I think it is, in Bhajan Amrita or something, that the devotees, we see devotees like the waves of the Ganges. So who's to say that when there's a bigger wave of the Ganges that is more purifying or more wonderful than the little wave? They're all Ganges water. So we're supposed to see all devotees like that. because they're all connected with Krishna, and Krishna's causelessly merciful to all of them and engaging all of them in his pastimes, which are on an absolute realm, we're supposed to treat them with that oneness, that absolute nature. And at the same time, you know, if you get splashed by a big wave of the Ganges, you know, it's going to have a different effect on you than little waves, and some of the bigger currents and whirlwinds and things, they all have different effects on you. So, you know, there is variety in the Ganges. Where you dip into the Ganges, have a big effect on you, and at the same time, it's all, you know, has this absolute purifying nature. So, it's not wrong to, on a spiritual platform, to comparatively see the differences between different devotees and different rasas and different avatars. Mm. They're all Krishna. You know, they're all Krishna, but Krishna has full the 64 qualities of the personality of Godhead, and you know, different manifestations of the Lord, avatars, especially Ram, Nrsimha, you know, have certain qualities. Lord Narayan, you know, certain qualities. Vishnu, certain qualities, and Shiva, Brahma, Jiva, Ata. Ultimately, you know, all of that consists of Krishna's different energies and his expansions. There's actually, there's nothing there but Krishna. You know, how do we, we're saying that this avatar has less qualities than Krishna, and actually it's just Krishna himself anyway. But he's not manifesting, you know, the his full potencies within that particular avatar. Or the material energy, from Krishna's point of view, and this is what we're studying in this chapter. In this chapter, we'll see that Prahlad Maharaj, as we go through, he's going to begin to say that, you know, Lord Narasimha is everywhere. You know, he's in the pillar. So then one may say, well, if he's in the pillar, then he must be material. No, even though he's in the pillar, the material energy is non-different from him as one of his energies, and he can make that material energy, his material energy and spiritual energy are in fact the same energy. Only difference is when he makes his energy act in such a way that if you get God, it has material quality, and when you act the same energy in such a way it helps you remember God, you become spiritualized and acts like the spiritual energy. So, it's one of the things that we have to do as a devotee is to understand the oneness, the absolute nature of Krishna and his energies and devotees and rasas. There's a oneness there, but if we ignore the varieties, we become impersonalists. And if we take note of the varieties within the absolute truth, we can't see them in a material way. You know, Bhavas, so, you know, they're the two pitfalls that we can actually make.
So it is correct to say that, say, Krishna in and his incarnations, they are one in tattva because all are Vishnu tattva.
Yes.
And at the same time, rasa or the manifestations are different.
Yeah.
Same with the devotees. Pure devotees are all are pure devotees, but yeah, according to the intimacy, we just...
Yeah. And the Brahma Samhita says that just as one candle lights up so many other candles, they're all equal. You know, that's the you know, we're supposed to see that, you know, sometimes we do festivals, we've had this discussion before, sometimes we do a festival for Lord Ram, and some devotees are going, oh, you know, this, you know, all right, I'll wait, I must have been show a bit of enthusiasm. I'm not a Ram Bhakta, but it's Krishna. Yeah. And Prabhupada mentions throughout his books, you know, they're equal with Krishna. You know, they're not less than Krishna, they're equal. It's Krishna, it's not different from Krishna. Because that, and he'll quote that verse in the Brahma Samhita. One can't, but Krishna is the origin. So, but you know, you do see that. It's changed a little bit now, but when we first started doing Ram festivals in this temple, I noticed that. That, you know, even, you know, some higher up were a bit disdainful and a bit critical. Just Ram, you know, why showing so much enthusiasm?
So at the same time, we can see, you know, the gopis, they see different other incarnations of Krishna in Krishna.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's that prayers and whatever sandeshas.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And they're praying, that, you know, because they're separated from Krishna. Yeah. You know. There's Varaha, you're lifted up. You know, so now lift us up from this pain of separation and, you know, so many things. You know, because Krishna, this is you, Varaha. You've lifted up the earth, but lift us up from this, you know, things like that. I can't remember exactly, but so they went through the list of different incarnations. You know, you did this, now do it to us. And that. So they weren't distinguishing that, you know, this is Krishna. You did this as Ram, you did this, now help us. And that.
All the gopis, they are not interested in associating with Narayana. They ask Narayana where is Krishna, she is.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Mm.
Can you repeat that point, saying about seeing the oneness and the difference? If we miss the...
If we, you know, we have to see everything on an absolute platform, because everything is, in fact, there is nothing but Krishna. So we actually have to see that that oneness. But in doing that, we have to acknowledge the varieties in spiritual life. And if we don't acknowledge those varieties, we become impersonal or even myavadis. And then in acknowledging the varieties, we have to be careful to always keep in concept the absolute nature as well. Otherwise, we can acknowledge the varieties in a material way.
Variety becomes material, thinking that
Madhurya is, you know, higher than, you know, Dasya, and this devotee is better than that one, and, you know, because it's, you know, there is an absolute nature to those relationships as well as the variety. And it is because of that, that, you know, the spiritual master always remains glorious to the disciple, and yet the disciple is doing something more glorious than the spiritual master. It is because of that, you know, that that variety can be there, and yet there's a oneness that just maintains, you know. So the variety means that, you know, the spiritual master and the disciple are glorifying each other with their loving service, in one sense. The spiritual master, you know, wanting to glorify the disciples and make them better even than themselves, and the disciple always wanting to glorify the spiritual master and give them credit. And Arjuna, you know, giving credit to Krishna, and Krishna saying, no, you fight this battle of Kurukshetra, you know. He showed Arjuna, it's time I've done it, but Arjuna, you be the instrument, I want you to get the glory. So, you know, there's a variety there, you know, it is the absolute nature of the spiritual world that allows that to happen. In other words, one never becomes less. They always maintain the absolute, you know, nature as non-different from the Lord, and therefore glorious, in one sense. It's all Krishna's lila. At the same time, there's variety. So, you know, there's so the, you know, these concepts of the Lord's causeless mercy and to the most disqualified, and Prahlad getting more mercy than Lakshmi, you know. They can be understood on that spiritual platform, but not from a material perspective.
One can also say that that instance when Narasimha put his hand on Prahlada's head, that instance Prahlada got more mercy than Lakshmiji, but Lakshmiji is getting more mercy eternally associating with Raya.
Yeah. So. That's right. Yeah, that's right. You know, that's quite nice, isn't it? You know?
I think Prahlad is telling the same reason, because Narasimhadeva just came when I prayed. I just prayed. I didn't serve him. That is one reason he considered himself disqualified. Second, Narasimhadeva just came once to protect me.
Right.
It was great. But at the same time, see Hanuman, he is constantly serving and he is with Lord Ramchandra.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So he says, my dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of my association with material desires one after another, I was gradually falling into a blind well full of snakes, following the general populace. But your servant, Narada Muni, kindly accepted me as his disciple and instructed me how to achieve this transcendental position. Therefore, my first duty is to serve him. How could I leave his service? Now, in this purport, again, Prabhupada mentions, as will be seen in later verses, although Prahlad was directly offered all benedictions he might have desired, he refused to accept such offerings from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the contrary, he asked the Lord to engage him in the service of his servant, Narada Muni. This is the symptom of a pure devotee. One should serve the spiritual master first. It is not that one should bypass the spiritual master and desire to serve the Supreme Lord. This is not the principle for a Vaishnava. Now, when it all comes down to it, so we discuss the absolute nature on the spiritual platform and the different varieties of loving exchanges. We experience that most profoundly by our relationship with our spiritual masters, the Vaishnavas. As we know, we may have one initiating spiritual master. We may have many Shiksha Gurus, and as a general principle, the initiating spiritual master is most commonly, the central focus, and the instructions coming from the variety of different Shiksha Gurus, coalesce and, are centralized and, put in their proper context and proportion for that particular disciple, through the Diksha Guru. So, but it is the Vaishnava Guru who, that represents Krishna. For we are reciprocating with Krishna by reciprocating through the Vaishnava Guru. Krishna is accepting our reciprocation through that spiritual master, those spiritual masters. And here with Prahlad, we learn how to do that. We learn how to reciprocate with Krishna, having proper Krishna consciousness, seeing the absolute nature of the spiritual realm with all its varieties. We do that through Guru. Our material propensity, of course, is to do something a little different. That this concept that taking shelter of someone in a superior position as a way of becoming very nicely situated, according to that is a very alien concept to us. That concept that I will place myself as a very disqualified person at the feet, the straw in my teeth and the rope around my neck like an animal, at the feet of the Vaishnavas, that concept is completely alien to the way we have thought for millions and millions of lives. And our general understanding of how we shall advance is that we shall always be promoting ourselves to a superior position of power and influence and facility. And even, you know, therefore we see that it's not uncommon. Now, what happened in the Gordian knot was that when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura left this world, even his leading disciples felt that that propensity was still there, that I am in a better position, not in the subordinate position to follow the instructions of my guru, but now that he is not present, this propensity I shall manifest to be above the instructions of the guru, in a superior position. So even at that, and that brought down the whole Gordian knot. So you can see, you know, how alien it is and how difficult it is. So we should not be surprised or astounded or in any way at all to see that that sort of influence flourishes also in ISKCON. For those, you know, those personalities were in the association of a Nitya-siddha devotee for most of their devotional life. And still that propensity to take a superior position above another Vaishnava who's actually, you know, one may ordinarily consider superior, is such a strong propensity that it manifested even in those very, you know, quite exalted personalities. You see just how stubborn that propensity is. Even, and you know, not only towards each other, but even towards such an exalted personality of as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, who they understood was a Nitya-siddha. They even understood this person's from the spiritual world. You know, it's not just, and still they couldn't hold back that propensity to place himself above his instructions.
Is that the doing of Maya then?
Well, it's Maya facilitates. You know, we say that Krishna is very merciful. If we have some material propensity within our heart, he will allow us to fulfill it. And but you can't. We can't blame Maya. Maya's position is that she, you know. Krishna understands what's in our heart, and if there are material propensities, Krishna will allow us to fulfill that.
Become a pig.
What's that?
Become a pig. Krishna is merciful.
You become a pig. We can become, Guru. What is it? Killer of a guru? What's that? Guru. There's a word for when it kills a guru, you know, in the sense that they dismiss their significance from their life in one sense. Is a word for it. So this verse, you know, by Prahlad Maharaj, his instruction is very, very significant. Now, of course, as we read this, bear in mind that the way I see these things justified, even by devotees, so over many, many years, you see that, you know, devotees, they study these verses, they read through them, and yet they somehow feel it doesn't apply to what they're doing,
their situation
of stepping over their superior devotees. They don't feel, because generally the way they feel it applies is that, you know, I have my one particular guru. And that's how this applies. I don't apply it to any other devotee in ISKCON. So, You know, that's not parampara. You know, we discussed that last week. Parampara. If we were going to apply this, then we would say that, you know, for instance, what is parampara? When Srila Prabhupada left the temple, you know, and went to another temple, he would say, you know, you follow the local leaders here, and, you know, they represent me, and if you have, you know, they'll give you instruction. So parampara meant that, you know, I'm going to another temple, but my will is through these people. That is parampara. Not that, you know, neglect the, I'm putting these men in charge. They're going to get you to go and sankirtan. They're going to use the money for book distribution, so many things, and everyone, and get everyone to work together like that. So, you know, and if you have questions, you can ask them. You can discuss the books and things like that. I don't need to answer every question if you have out there, because if there's difficulties, write me a letter. But parampara meant that, you know, they're acting on my behalf. That's parampara. Not that when I'm gone, don't listen to anything these leaders say, you know, because I'm the parampara means me, you know. Just, you know, you can only ask me directly. So, yes, it does refer to the guru, but if the guru puts, you know, disciples under the watchful eye of other leading devotees, you know, in the center they're in or the zone they're in, or, you know, and gets them to even visit other zones to take other specific, then that is also, you know, to you know, that's parampara. So it applies the same way. So in other words, if the spiritual master says, for deity worship, here is the leader of the deity worship. While I'm away, I want you to learn deity worship from that person. So then the pujari comes into the temple to do the deity worship, and the person who's been put in charge says, you know, when we do the deity worship, we'll do like that. No. I've read something different in the books. So then they're doing this. They're actually, stepping above, their spiritual master. That they may think, oh, this person's not my spiritual master. This is, you know, Bhakta Burfi or whatever. but it's actually the same thing. Huh? So let's read this verse. Very important. One should not be anxious to offer direct service to the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised that one become a servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord, Kapibhattu, Padakamala Dasana Das. So here we go again, parampara. What is parampara? Not servant, servant. Servant, servant, servant. Okay, parampara. The concept of parampara, I'm the servant of the servant, that's not parampara. Our parampara is servant of the servant of the servant. Three times mentioned. Three times is very significant. Three times means that, why am I serving this servant of the Lord? Because he has situated himself in the parampara as the servant of the servant of the Lord. We don't accept any servant of the Lord. We accept a servant who's in parampara. So when you say, I'm the servant of the servant of the servant, means I'm the servant of one who's in parampara. Three times. If you just say, I'm the servant of the servant, any parampara? Not necessarily. That's a problem. I'm the servant of the servant. Why this servant? Because he's in parampara. He's also the servant of the servant. That's what it means. And the other thing it means is that, you know, we do take, parampara allows us to serve the servant of the servant. It's not just directly the one, you know, so like that. So we're serving Srila Prabhupada. That's parampara. How are we doing that? Through our spiritual master. Some people, how are they serving their spiritual master? Through another disciple of their spiritual master. Servant, servant. That's parampara. This is the process for approaching the Supreme Lord. The first service should be rendered to the spiritual master so that by his mercy one can approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead and render service. Right? So that's the first service to the spiritual master. While teaching Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Guru Krishna Prasadapaya Bhakti Lata Bija. One can achieve the seat of devotional service by the mercy of the Guru, the spiritual master, and then by the mercy of Krishna. That's what that verse means. You know, that's a very nice way Prabhupada says, you know, we serve the spiritual master, then you can get the mercy of Krishna, not the other way around. This is the secret of success. And here Prabhupada gives this, you know, just a very short statement. But of all the different things we read, you know, in this whole section, whenever this point comes up, that's the secret, he said. This is the success formula. Why is it a secret? It's written everywhere. It's a secret because it's very rarely understood. It's a very confidential knowledge that even you can put it in the books and people will, they'll see everything else on that page and that part, oh, a little sentence there, not very, it's only a small sentence. Couldn't be much in that one.
It's not embroidered.
Yeah, it's an open secret. Why is it also a secret? Because you can read it, but unless you practice it, you won't understand.
Yeah.
First, one should try to please the spiritual master, and then one should attempt to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core, also says, Yasha Prasada Bhagavat Prasada. One should not attempt to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead by concoction. One must first be prepared to serve the spiritual master, and when one is qualified, he is automatically offered the platform of direct service to the Lord. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj proposed that he engage in the service of Narada Muni. He never proposed that he engage directly in the service of the Lord. This is the right conclusion. Again, Prabhupada emphasizing this. So he's not just writing, but he just puts this emphasis. This is the secret of success. This is the right conclusion. He wants you to hone that in. Therefore, he said, So hum, katam, na visraje tavabhrcha sevam. How can I give up the service of my spiritual master who has favoured me in such a way that I'm now able to see you face to face? Prahlad Maharaj prayed to the Lord that he might continue to engage in the service of his spiritual master, Narada Muni. So, now, how does it manifest that we are trying to engage in the direct service of the Lord? So, one, as we've seen, you know, one way of sort of skirting around this and not actually, you know, taking this is to say that, you know, parampara means me, my spiritual master, I'm the servant of the servant. You know, well, that was not mentioned in the Bhagavad Tongue. What's mentioned is servant of the servant, servant. You know, even if we accept that principle of the servant of the servant, the servant, if the spiritual master is giving instructions for us to operate under the authority of other devotees, and we don't do that, we're literally, that is neglecting the instruction of the spiritual master. And Krishna, then Krishna considers we're not following that principle. That active principle is not there. So then what we do, it becomes a concoction, because instead of the spiritual master is said to some leading devotees, you know, I really want book distribution to be the prime thing, but you know, I also want this to go on, you know, prasadam distribution and things like that, so you know, please engage it, you know, the devotees in the temple like that. So then you've got the senior devotees and they're, you know, giving this mood, you know, to the devotees like that, and engaging in such a way. So if a devotee says, well, you know, I disagree, in order to serve my spiritual master, because I know if I please my spiritual master, I'll get Krishna's mercy, I feel I want to do, you know, that this is more important.
How do you know?
You see? So, the concept is, I really want to please my spiritual master, and if I do this big thing here, to me, that's more important than, you know, what you're getting us to do. But still, the thing that those devotees are getting to do is what the spiritual master wants them to do. See, so, it's a bit, So then what they do, even though they're serving Krishna, it is a concoction. Although it may be one of the authorized services in ISKCON. You know, but it's authorized services by Srila Prabhupada, but at that particular time, in that particular temple. You know, in our day, one of the things we mostly did was collect money, you know, because we didn't have a congregation. And there was always a big dilemma that there were some devotees who wanted to, you know, we should all be out distributing books, you know, forget this collecting money and things like that. So, of course, you know, our understanding was if we don't come back, like when, you know, especially little temples like Perth, you don't come back with the money, you know, there'll be nothing to eat tomorrow. You know, we're living day to day. We won't be able to pay our rent. We won't be able to pay the light. We've got this big house. We're in the suburbs. And we literally got to keep a certain amount of money coming in. And, you know, we have so many expenses like that. And, you know, there were times where you knew, you know, when the if the collections were quite meager, it affected the food that you're eating. So, you know, we understood, you know, yes, we have to distribute the books and everything like that, but at the same time, devotees who were distributing books and selling books were not necessarily able to pay all the bills at the temple. And you know, that therefore there's a problem, you know. Because it was just basically coming from, you know, the GBC to the, you know, the spiritual master, and it was just authorized that, you know, there has to be a certain amount of, you know, selling paraphernalia, then we just did that. But there were other devotees in the temple who would even preach in the Srimad Bhagavatam classes that actually what you're doing is karma yoga, it's not even bhakti. And they would say that in the Srimad Bhagavatam class. You know, you're not even doing bhakti. You're doing karma yoga. And some of them, you know, would refuse to go out and so many different things. So, you know, there were big problems. And, you know, some became highly critical of, you know, some of the leaders and so many things, and the fights and arguments and things like that. So, you know, it shows you the sort of thing that can happen. But according to different times, different places, just like, you know, there's the instruction to go out and Harinam. Yeah, but you go to some of the Muslim countries, you know, and you say, oh, let's be like Prahlad Maharaj, you know. Just go out, preach boldly, have faith in the holy name. Yeah, people will get killed. Yeah, devotees get killed. But the local authorities who understand the sensitivities of preaching in, you know, those places, they will say, well, you know, it's come down, you know. Yes, hurry now, book these things will be there one day, but not now. You know, we don't want any devotees getting killed. So, you know, this has come down through the throat. If someone ignores those senior devotees and says, no, look, it's in the books, it's everywhere. Prabhupada says this is the main thing, is book distribution, Hari Nam, this is the safest place, I'm going to do that, and they ignore the authorities. It's actually they're overstepping the spiritual master by overstepping the local authorities who are, you know, preaching put in time, place and circumstances there, you know, which is what is authorized. So it just becomes a concoction. And in one sense, by stepping over the spiritual master, stepping over the parampara chain that's linked with the spiritual master, the devotional service one performs becomes a concoction. It's not authorized. Another thing here also is that, you know, another way it can play out is that devotees can accept the spiritual master, accept the parampara of the local devotees, and still have the concoction also that is not enough, that there is something bigger than that, where they can do some big service for Krishna, where Krishna will, you know, somehow give them some special attention. So, you know, that position where, you know, one is, you know, doing a very humble, very difficult, you know, service. There's no credit, there's no facility, you know, there's a lot of trouble, there's a lot of anxiety, there's a lot of physical stress, you know, there's no recognition, but it's coming down through the parampara. This is a service, you know, that you've got to do. It's like chanting your rounds. Getting up among, you know, getting up on a cold morning, you're at home and what have you, and you get up and you chant your rounds, you know. No one's even watching you, but it's coming down through the parampara. You chant your rounds, you know. So, no, you know, there's no credit, there's not a big thing. It doesn't appear like a big thing, but, you know, you do it because it's coming down through the parampara. But one, you know, different, that position of being just a menial servant in ISKCON with, and you know, and there's no, you know, credit, there's no praise, there's no facility, there's just hardship. One may think, but, you know, if I take this other service and serve Krishna directly with this, offer this big, big thing, you know, I'll sort of minimize this coming down through the parampara. I accept that, but actually I'll do this for Krishna. Like that. So it's another way of, you know, somehow that propensity. I'll just serve Krishna. I've got something, you know, directly to Krishna. So the parampara doesn't want me to do that, but I can offer it to Krishna anyway, and they'll see because it's such a big thing. So, yeah.
So now that, you know, if the devotee doesn't want to overstep the authorities, but at the same time not able to carry out the instructions as well, then how this would be?
Yeah, so that's a good question.
Because each devotee has got different qualities.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, some devotees can't do any food issues, but some can't cook.
Yeah. Mm.
So, like that. So if he receives an instruction which he's not able to do that.
Yeah, so for instance, you know, let's look at, say, in Srila Prabhupada's time, sometimes we found that certain devotees within the temple couldn't get along with some of the authorities. And, you know, the disagreements and perhaps the lack of faith. In some of those cases, what Srila Prabhupada would do, he would get some of those devotees to actually start a new centre. You know? He would say, so then maybe we'll get you, you know, because Prabhupada always had so many opportunities, you know, up and coming. So, you know, he would sometimes, you know, acknowledge that, okay, there's a difficulty. They're trying, but not able to do it. And so Prabhupada would alleviate the tension and, you know, somehow or another perhaps, you know, transfer one to India or sometimes ask them to start a temple or, you know, to join the traveling, you know. The attempt to, you know, to not be averse to the principle. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, in the purport, Prabhupada says that, you know, one who is never not envious, I think it's in the third chapter, you know, of this cycle of Jagya and, you know, my instructions in the Gita, like that. But Prabhupada says that, you know, one may not be able to follow the instructions of Krishna, you know, as they're sort of coming through the Guru, but they're not averse to the principles. That person is assured of success. So that's not a problem. You know, sometimes someone is not able to get along with authorities or doesn't have complete faith in those particular authorities, but they're not averse to that principle that's the way that Krishna's mercy will come. you know, is by, you know, the parampara system, the local authorities, you know, connected to the guru and the acharyas and like that. That's the way Krishna's moving. I'm not averse to that. I don't want to be a big devotee. I'm quite happy to be the servant of the servant's servant. I'm not averse to that. I want to do that, but I'm struggling to do that. That person is assured of success if they're not averse to it. It's where a person is actually averse to that principle in their heart. That's where you have a problem. Yeah. So the spiritual master and Krishna can make all sorts of adjustments. You know, when there's something, because not all the authorities, you know, are that easy to work with. And some of them are not properly given the directions that were received through their authorities either. And then they're thinking, well, actually, Prabhupada said to do this, but you're telling me to do something else. Now, that's a real dilemma, because I'm supposed to follow you, which means following Prabhupada, but you're not following Prabhupada, so what happens there? So, you know, if a person is not averse to the principles that Krishna has given, that's not a problem, and Krishna will make adjustments. Just like in some temples, you know, they're worshipping Tulsi under the authorities. It wasn't even Tulsi. It was like Basil. But you know, Prabhupada basically, you know, well, Krishna is still going to reward you anyway because you're following the principle. You know, there's no loss because the whole time you're following the principle of, you know, what the authorities are asking you to do, connected to Krishna. So that principle is being maintained. Krishna is very pleased that that's there in someone's heart because it's a very rare principle. So there is no loss. And it shows how sometimes the authorities are just completely doing the wrong thing. But if they're not averse to the principle, that's not a problem. Krishna will make adjustments. The problem is when someone is actually averse to that and they're thinking, or they actually... take that principle and just place it as something not as significant as what it is. See, in this purport here, Prabhupada is saying this is the secret of success. And he's saying that this is the right conclusion. You know, so he's really emphasized here we've got the essence, this is the main thing, this is to be followed. Now, if someone takes this and just places it as, look, there are so many ways we can serve Krishna, you know. So, you know, there's so many different ways, you know, we can serve Krishna, you know. I don't have to do it your way, you know. So, you know, that's not such a big thing if I don't do it your way. And they don't embrace that principle of the servant, the servant, the servant. You know, very reluctant to tread on that, to disrespect that principle. If someone is quite quickly at the first opportunity to, you know, trample over that principle as something, you know, to be, you know, not taken so important, and even be, you know, a little averse that they have to follow that, there's a problem there. For that devotee will, you know, face significant problems.
What would you say in situations where part of a competition that we want to serve spiritual master well, then say that suppose the recipes are something I make is very nice, I don't tell anybody else. No, I don't want any spiritual master, so I should serve spiritual master well. Is that mentality also coming in the same category? So that I, with my other godless sisters, or even questions, I just don't want them. So I want to serve my spiritual master the best. So it's another part, not, it's again a competition that I'm serving well.
Yeah.
Is there a problem in that? That we don't want to serve other Vaishnavas. How is that in this category? Or that's a different issue?
No, it's the same issue that, you know, what happens is that so someone is doing some nice service to the, you know, through the local authorities, they've got the opportunity to serve and you know, they're serving their spiritual master either directly or, you know, in his absence in a particular way. And then what happens is another devotee who is jealous of them, or who, you know, wants to get more attention of their spiritual master than that devotee is getting, they may try to undermine them, push them out the way, replace them, you know, take their service from them, or give it to someone else, or whatever like that. So, you know, those things do happen. So, but it's the same point, that if we're doing something in the mood of the servant of the servant of the servant, then, you know, there can be competition, even very fierce competition in a swan-eat-swan world, and, you know, everything is nicely done. But when the mood of the servant of the servant of the servant is neglected and the competition is there, then this is where we're actually trying to get to Krishna directly rather than through that process, and that's where a devotee does create a problem, in which case, you know, devotees who do that, devotees who their competition is not in the mood of this with the maintain the servant, serve the servant, you know, they should be corrected by senior devotees. It should not be encouraged, and they should not allow their service to be disturbed by such a devotee. Prabhupada says in one of the purports relating to envy in the Srimad Bhagavad, in the Bhagavad Gita, I think it's the 12th chapter, can't remember offhand, but he says, you know, on the question of envy, devotees are never envious. He says that one should not allow one's service to be disrupted or disturbed, because it's exactly, you know, by another devotee's service. So, you know, if there is envy within another devotee, which manifests in their inability to maintain that mood of the servant of the servant of the servant, one should not allow such devotees to disrupt the service of those who are maintaining the principle of the servant of the servant of the servant. Now, let's take Prabhupada as an example, right? Which is always a good example. Prabhupada was asked to preach Krishna consciousness in the West, especially the English-speaking language, and especially to concentrate on book distribution, and he was asked by his spiritual master to do that. And as the servant of the servant of the servant, because Prabhupada tried to do that by serving his godbrothers to work under them to facilitate executing his guru's order. He never said, oh, my guru's given me this instruction, I'm an empowered acharya, off I go. I don't need any of you guys, and you watch how great I become. I have no qualification. Dear God brother, can you know, I work with you and somehow we'll work together and facilitate this instruction, this spiritual. I'm the servant of you who are the servant of, you know, like that. So he took that principle. And he was obstructed by them. And in a lot of cases it was just envy. It was the political maneuvering with their other godbrothers in the battle that took shape after their spiritual master. You know, they didn't want their godbrother to get a higher position. They wanted to extend their mat. And, you know, there was all sorts of political intrigues of, you know, who would become superior and who would win the battle and who would, you know, be guru. And there's so many different things. And, you know, Prabhupada was, you know, someone who could, you know, prop up their personal ambitions in devotees who had already lost the principle of servant, 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 but not even serving the spiritual master's instructions. And so Srila Prabhupada, in the Gita, that's why he says that. You know, you don't let another, you know, on the question of envy, one should not allow another devotee's service to affect one's own service. So, if we follow the principle, so Prabhupada did not allow his godbrothers to stop him from serving the orders of his spiritual master. and nor did he allow them to delay him, because some of them gave him instructions which, you know, would have taken him 10 years, you know, working under them, with barely related to the instruction of spiritual, by which time he would have left his body. So Prabhupada did not allow another devotee's service to affect their own service. All the time he tried to follow the principle of the servant of the servant, but they were unqualified to accept his service. They were actually, what should have happened is that as a servant, sir, he wanted to maintain the mood. I will serve you, and because you are my senior devotee, we will both serve. I will serve under you to fulfill the order of the spiritual master, and we will preach in the West. And he tried to maintain that. They would not allow him to do that, and therefore, you know, he was not averse to the principle, but couldn't follow it with them. So literally, he had to go alone. He was not averse to the principle of being servant of the servant of the servant, but it was not possible to serve them and execute his service, and therefore he had to actually not allow him in the long run to execute his service. So we maintain the principle, we should never be averse, we should always embrace that principle of being the servant servant. It's not always possible to do it because the people, the Vaishnavas sometimes were trying to serve, in the case like Dronacharya, who Krishna said basically should be rejected. You know, Arjuna is saying, how can I kill these people? They're like my gurus. And the answer is because they had lost their sense of discrimination. They were not qualified to accept that service in that superior position. Therefore, they're to be rejected. So, you know, we embrace that principle, but it's not always possible to follow. But we should never be averse to it. We should never be seeking the opportunity to direct, to go around that, you know, when the opportunity is there to be the servant of the servant, and we're seeking the opportunity to get out of it. We should never be like that. That's a different thing. That's where the problem is.
In this case, it could not be envy. It could be just
feeling
of insecurity.
There's a lot of envy. Look, don't disregard envy too quickly, because there's a lot of it around. It's flourishing. And it's disguised as bhakti. There's a lot of it. So, you know, always we always try to be the servant of the servant, but sometimes because, you know, the principle of envy does not allow devotees to follow that very nicely. It's more, Prabhupada says this is the secret of success. You know, it's a secret, means there's so many devotees and few will understand this. And even those who follow, who understand it, few will actually, you know, embrace it as, or this is how I'm going to be a devotee. I will go through this movement trying to glorify other devotees who have come before me, and glorify what services they have done, and simply what they have already done. If I can serve them and do something, they're doing such nice service, if I can do something for them which is in line with Srila Prabhupada and my spiritual master, then that's what I would. I have no desire to do something, you know, great and grand myself. Prahlad's position, he's not saying, you know, oh yes, I've got so many big services I can do now that I've been blessed by the Lord. No, I have no desire, you know, than to take the position of servant, servant, servant. If a devotee goes through, you know, ISKCON like that as their life and soul, then they're following Prahlad Maharaj, they're guaranteed. But there's very few devotees, especially these days, who follow that, because, you know, it needs training, and that material quality where we're averse to that needs to be knocked out of us. And a lot of that knocking out process is, you know, the hard yards on Sankirtan and working under a senior devotee at close range for, you know, long periods of time, you know, distributing books, you know, doing difficult services, so many things like that. Actually, you know, in today's society, you can come along and, you know, you can avoid being scrutinized by any senior devotee at all. And you can be around for 10, 15 years and no one's ever scrutinized at all what you do on a significant basis. And, you know, this quality of envy, as we said, here it is in the Gaudiya Mutt, still there, and undermine the whole movement. And we shouldn't be surprised that it'll be within us. And yet, in today's society, devotees can go for 10, 15, 20 years and never be scrutinized as to, you know, do you have any envy? You know, are you averse to some of your senior devotees giving you an instruction from time to time? I certainly am. You know, I'll select the devotees who can instruct me. Yes, I'll take instruction, which is palatable, you know, to my mind and senses. And, interesting. All right, let's leave it there. It's a very nice section. And next week, Saturday, we will be having Bhakti Vedanta, and you know, Nisringa Chattadasi is the next day, Sunday. And we will be discussing, how Prahlad then describes Krishna. What is Krishna consciousness? You know, the result of getting the blessing, and that is how you actually perceive the Lord everywhere, even within the material world, and all the events that happen to us within our life. Jai.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Oh, yes, thank you, Shana. My wife's just given
painting.
She's highlighted his teeth.
Yeah.
His protective appearance. Yeah. Probably because I haven't been well, she's trying to protect me. I'm better now.
Prabhu, I was in a house program yesterday. I was attending the class, but I asked the question. We have this knowledge and still we find it difficult.